Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency. After our CEO did his speech, Dave rang his glass with his spoon, stood up and said he had a speech of his own to make. He proceeded to climb on the table, take his clothes off, and told the CEO he could take that.
Okay, maybe we don't need to investigate. We don't necessarily want to be collecting video evidence of what's gone on. Everybody saw it. Make sure that people are aware that you are still expecting standards of behaviour. There's various things that lawyers can do to try and clean up a situation like that. So where we've got behaviour that's so bad that regardless of how good a process would have been, they'd have been dismissed anyway. There is a legal argument that we can use to say, look, judge, yes, they've stuffed up on the procedure, but had they done the procedure right, they'd have gone anyway. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Episode 21.
We're there. We made it.
This means that HRER is in the top percentile of podcasts ever.
It also means that people have listened to us witter on for 10 hours.
In
total.
Wow.
10 hours.
That's some quick maths. I didn't even realise.
Half of 20.
Yeah, yeah. Stop it. Making me look silly. But welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again. Intros. Do you want to? I'm Ollie Robinson.
I'm Alyssa Thursfield. We should all know by now. Yeah. 21 episodes in.
We say it every time, don't we?
Does this mean we're an established podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I think at the time of going to air, we were number 16 of in the top
50 in the UK.
Top 50 HR podcasts. So hopefully, you know, we'll get a bump up into the top 15. That'd be quite nice.
Please, everyone, like and all that stuff. Like, watch it so we look good. The first few weeks of the rise were quite meteoric. Went from like 50 to 20. And the dopamine was... It was rushing.
I feel like we're clawing our way up now rather than
it's
sort of flying
progress,
up.
Isn't it? Yeah. It's much so. We've got a few big hitters above us though, but we're coming for you.
Yeah.
Wherever you are.
Yeah. Daniel Barnett, I love you, but I'm coming for you.
Episode 21, the title of this one is The Employee Who Got Naked at the Christmas Party.
You've been dying to do this one, haven't
you? Like a Victorian novel. Yeah, I actually have, yeah. Similar to the OnlyFans one, I've been looking forward to this. Mm-hmm. The email itself, I will read out. Hi Alyssa, I think I know how to deal with this, but I just wanted to run it past you for your take. We had our office Christmas party last night. We throw a great party, live music, free course meal, and we pay for all the alcohol in an open bar. What a dream. One of our senior managers, Dave, again Dave, had a little too much to drink. Personally, I think he'd been drinking before he arrived. After our CEO did his speech, Dave rang his glass with his spoon, stood up and said he had a speech of his own to make. He proceeded to climb on the table, take his clothes off, and told the CEO he could take that, which we can assume what that means.
Oh, it was the finger gesture that came with it, I think.
Oh, was the finger. I was thinking it was the... Well, okay. With his thanks and stuck his middle finger up. There we go. And then told him he could go F his job. Yeah, I can't say that. He was sent home in a taxi immediately, and we were ready to call him in for a termination meeting today. But I've just had his wife on the phone saying she thinks he's having a breakdown. What are your thoughts?
So, again, real story. This one actually is a couple of years old. So, actually, we're pretty close to the... So, we do, you know, sort of change sectors, names, obviously. That's why everybody's Dave. But this one's pretty much to the core what happened. So, senior manager gets on the table, gets naked, verbally abusive, swinging his bits around on the table. Swinging stuff around. Tells the company they can go stick their job. So HR actually, you know, they felt pretty comfortable with how they were going to deal with this. What concerned me was that it was the next day and they were calling him in for a termination meeting.
Quick, that, innit?
That's very quick. It's that kind of knee-jerk reaction again, so that we haven't got... Okay, maybe we don't need to investigate. We don't necessarily want to be collecting video evidence of what's gone on. Everybody saw it.
No.
you know, hand him onto the whole company. But really, you know, we've still got to follow a disciplinary process. We can suspend him. We don't have to, you know, plow straight into that termination meeting. And in some ways, the wife's phone call here has saved the company from diving into a procedure really too quickly.
You think that were a bit of a blessing in disguise, do you?
It was. It sort of put the brakes on things a little bit. It does add a complicating factor because it brings in that mental health element. Mm-hmm. But even when you have got very, very serious behaviour, you still have to follow a process. So even though it was witnessed by so many people, you know, we've absolutely gone in bang to rights. The fact that there was alcohol involved, again, doesn't really matter. We still allow time to invite somebody to the hearing, allow them to prepare, to have their say before we actually come to that decision. Because when we're saying calling in for a termination meeting, they've made the decision. So
it's not much left to the imagination there, is it?
Yeah, so thankfully the wife's phone call came before they'd sent the email text message. However, they were going to be inviting him to, and they were going to call it a termination meeting.
Wow.
Which, you know, would have... There's various things that lawyers can do to try and clean up a situation like that. So where we've got behaviour that's so bad that regardless of how good a process would have been, they'd have been dismissed anyway, there is a legal argument that we can use to say, look, judge, yes, they've stuffed up on the procedure, but had they done the procedure right, they'd have gone anyway.
You'd have got to that same outcome.
So they can still be technically an unfair dismissal, but there's no compensation due. But you've still got to get dragged through a court process to get to that point, which really, we want a nice, tight, clean defence. We don't want to have to be going, yes, we made a mistake, but... So there is that kind of saving grace that lawyers can kind of pull out the bag, but there's no guarantee that you will get that compensation down to zero. There's no guarantee that a judge will agree that they'd have been dismissed anyway. And what the judge has got the ability to do is say, well, look, had you gone through a fair investigation process, appeal process, that could have lasted 6 weeks when his employment would have continued. So actually, as a starting point, there's still some pay that's going to be due because we've got to compensate for that period.
Okay.
So it's, you know, I do get employers that will ring me and go, oh, can you pull that magic trick? It's not waving a magic wand that we can just fix things. It's kind of a last resort. So always, always, always back to policy, back to procedure, even where we've got something really, really serious, making sure we're doing things properly.
Poker face.
Yeah.
Poker face. Questions to ask as an employer. We will begin. What risks do open bars at company events pose, and how can HR manage them without ruining the fun? This seems very obvious to answer. But
that scenario is the risk.
the
contents of that email are the risk of the of what happens
Drink
when you have an open bar.
Drink as much as you want. It's
yes,
on us.
Open bars are amazing for morale when you tell someone it's going to happen. Terrible for morale afterwards when you then have a string of disciplinaries that you have to deal with because of people's behaviour at a work event. So my view with alcohol at work events is always fine if you're going to do it. Make sure that people are aware that you are still expecting standards of behaviour. So the risk with this one was, because it sounds like the best party in the world, live music, three-course dinner, open bar. It sounds like
dream.
A license to go let loose.
Yes.
But actually, even though it's a party, it's still a work event. So as much as, and I'm sure most people who are listening will at some point have either had to send this email or will have received it and gone, killjoys, is whilst we want everyone to have fun, please remember.
Oh, yeah.
We expect standards of behaviour. Don't lose control. We don't want anyone to be getting into trouble on a Monday morning. And the attitude that you'll get to that is, oh, killjoys, you know, it's the Christmas party.
They need to say that anyway.
Yes, you need to say it.
We're all adults, though.
No, we're not. Okay. People may look like adults. They may appear to be of the correct height and age to be classed as adults, but they're not. You have to tell people what's expected of them. Otherwise, then, when you come to tell them off afterwards, they'll say, well, I didn't know. There's an open bar.
Didn't say I couldn't take my kit off on table.
Exactly. Yeah. That wasn't written in the policies, it is now. Nudity at Christmas parties? Absolutely not. So we want to be telling people, look, this is the expectation of standards of behaviour. Yes, we will be providing alcohol, but if you abuse our generosity, and if your behaviour falls below standard, the fact that you were intoxicated will not be a valid defence.
No.
So
if
having
anything, it'll count against them, surely, for to be out of control.
Particularly, because if you're abusing the company's hospitality and then behave in a way that is of a very, very poor standard, yeah, it's not going to mitigate it. Mm. And you do get that as well. You'll pull someone into a disciplinary meeting and they'll say, oh, but I was absolutely hammered. I didn't mean to. Well, you were hammered. Doesn't matter. We're still going to judge you on the behaviour that you demonstrated.
You put yourself in that situation anyway. Do you know what I mean? Accountability at all times, please.
And also, you know, when it comes to things like preserving your relationship with your colleagues, embarrassing yourself in front of your boss, you don't want to be waking up, and I sound like I'm giving a parental lecture here, you don't want to be waking up the next morning thinking, who do I need to apologise to? Is there anything worse than waking up, getting clear of the headache and then going, oh no.
Do you know what, it's bad enough if you do it on a night out.
Never mind with work.
Never mind with office. Don't look at me, anyone.
Yeah, it's not cool.
I was naughty. Yeah, I know I was.
Yeah, it's not cool. Don't do it.
Nah.
And particularly with, and look, here's me being the teacher again, with the new rules and the new duty around sexual harassment in the workplace, being absolutely mind-bogglingly drunk is not going to be a defence if someone accuses you of sexual harassment. If you say, well, look, I never would have grabbed your bottom had I been sober and in the office, but I'd had a skinful, it's not a defence.
That in itself, that's a horrible thing to say to someone as well. Yeah. Like, you're lucky I was drunk. I want to touch you. That's horrible, isn't it? Cool. Next question. Poor performance is a top three reason for disciplinary action. What company policies are violated if an employee takes their clothes off and makes profound statements about their jobs? All of them?
It's not performance. No? This is purely square in conduct, this one.
Right.
So no matter how they feel about the company, they may have some legitimate grievances and complaints. However, stood on a table naked at a Christmas party is not the place to air them. Hopefully that goes without saying to anybody who's listening. That's not where we do it. We have a grievance procedure, which our amazing software will help you submit properly. Not naked on a table at a Christmas party.
That's not like.
So I would say, yes, whilst performance up there with the big percentages, this one falls squarely into conduct. So you've got someone who has indecently exposed themselves, made some rude and offensive gestures, has verbally abused senior management. In addition to all of those, I'd be adding breach of trust and confidence, brought the company into disrepute, brought senior management into disrepute. It's going to be very, very difficult if that person's a senior manager for them to walk in on Monday morning and with a straight face continue to line manage their team.
Yes, the respect is gone.
It's undermining their ability to do their job because of the conduct that they've displayed. So this, for me, fell squarely into gross misconduct.
Did anyone at the company, like, did that this happened at, did they say, this guy's really bad, but by God, it were funny? Did anyone admit that they found it, like,
entertaining? Oh, they did. Of course they did. Yeah, they thought it was absolutely hilarious.
Great, I'm glad.
Particularly because the sector as well that they were in, they're very, very, for such a wild Christmas party, quite straight-laced.
Stiff upper lip job. Like,
yeah, so there's some companies where, you know, people do let loose. It's kind of almost expected that behaviour is going to fall below standard because it falls below standard when they're all sober and in work, never mind when you put alcohol into the mix. This one, they were all very kind of like sensible people. So it was the best Christmas party they'd ever had.
They were all
as
like,
some people
phones
concerned.
Out, like, look at this. Yeah. Crazy. Next employer question. We kind of touched about like which avenues to go down previous, but should this situation lead to a disciplinary procedure or immediate termination? Should HR set clear behaviour policies for company events? They definitely should, as you alluded to there with that, sort of the email reference.
So
it
definitely not
anyway.
Instant termination. We're wanting, as we've said, the disciplinary process. And we should absolutely be setting out standards of behaviour. So before the party, saying, look, yes, there'll be an open bar. These are the standards we expect. And also, you know, it's something that I'm seeing increasingly common is an alcohol in the workplace, alcohol at events policy. So if you are going to a work event where alcohol is served, this is what we expect in terms of standards of behaviour, level of consumption, and that your ability
is it like a unit specified that you can consume up till? Is it that?
It's not that strict, but it is basically within your tolerances, you are expected to still be able to remain professional. So particularly, I mean, this one with it being Christmas party, it was all internal people. But if you're at an event where there's alcohol with people from outside of the company, there is that increased risk of reputational damage or that you could do something that the company then has to clean up afterwards with external stakeholders. So that's obviously more serious. So my view generally is if you're going to an event where there's alcohol involved and it's with people outside of the company, you want to halve that alcohol consumption. You don't, you know, I'd be sipping on one small glass of wine all evening. I very, very rarely, I will take one. I mean, I do drink alcohol, so I will take one, not to be polite, but because I will have one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will slowly drink it through the night. I won't be someone who's back at the bar, because I'm very aware if I'm at a company event, I'm representing the company. I am working and I want all of my faculties about me so that I can still hold a sensible conversation, so I'm not slurring my words or having people afterwards going, oh, the business sounds really interesting, but she needs to sort herself out. Nobody wants that.
No. You, again, like you say, you risk proper like reputation. Once that's done,
yeah,
as well, the reputational damage, you can't get that back.
No.
Like, it's broken, ain't it? The trust between sort of clients and what
have you. And you don't want as well that when you're going to work events with external people, that when people see your name on a list thinking, oh, she's going to be hammering the bar. You don't want that to be the first thing that people think about. So, yes, you know, people who see it as a perk, great, there's alcohol at an event, but there's an increasing trend, particularly I'm seeing it in tech world and actually with younger companies. So younger as in startup, but also where you've got younger founders, where they very much promote no alcohol events, because where you've got people who are either pregnant, breastfeeding, looking after young children, or people of certain religious denominations, they don't drink alcohol. And actually by having an alcohol centric culture, you are excluding people from the ability to take part in social events. And it sends that message that unless you're a drinker, you're not really in our culture.
It's a clicky thing, isn't it?
It is. And it's not, one, it's not particularly a healthy approach.
No.
But two, you know, we should be including people regardless of whether they want to drink alcohol or not. So I would say when you're looking at your social calendar from, you know, a planning perspective, if alcohol is a consistent feature, think why. Why do we feel the need to kind of lubricate the wheels of the social calendar with alcohol? What else can we be doing instead that's more inclusive, where people can, you know, get to know each other a bit better? And where it lowers the risk if there isn't alcohol involved.
You're not team building, are you, really, with alcohol? You forget about what you've said the day after.
I mean, yes, it helps people to relax, but it also, like I say, it raises that risk profile. And it's one of the things that, for anyone who is using our risk assessment on sexual harassment, so when you're looking at assessing what is the risk of it occurring in the workplace, that if you have events where alcohol is served, it raises your risk of sexual harassment occurring in your workplace.
Is that a stat?
I'm sure there are stats out there, but where you're at a work event or a work social event, if sexual harassment occurs there, just because it's not on the premises, it's still sexual harassment that the employer is potentially responsible for. So by providing alcohol or open bars,
is it worth it?
You're increasing your risk. Yeah, with something like that. So at the very least, if you are going to be having alcohol-centric events, make sure that the standards of behaviour are set out and that you have a policy that covers it. Which, again, it makes it sound like, you know, party is something that should be really fun and you've got the lawyer who's kind of bringing the tone down again. But you've got to think it's the risk to your business that if we don't handle these things properly, and particularly now with the duty to prevent sexual harassment in the workplace, we've got to try and anticipate when it could happen. And alcohol invariably is going to increase that likelihood.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you see it as well, like with the, I don't know if the death of the culture is accurate, but like the decline in like pub culture.
Yeah.
Like less people are going out on a Friday. Mm-hmm. Pubs are emptying, aren't they? Like nationwide. Mm. And in Britain, that was like, that is huge to us, isn't it? Like we drink. Not me personally, not you, but like we do drink as a culture. Like it's big for us and it's dying now.
Yeah. I mean, I've recently just come back from leave and talking to Americans when they were away, and when they heard our accents and we were talking about drinking culture, and they said, oh yeah, you Brits can really drink. And then when they heard my husband was Welsh, and they were like, and you guys are on a different level. You really know how to put it away. And there is that kind of association, I think, you know, it's the pint of beer in a pub is the perception of English and British culture. So, and it's not necessarily a nice thing. There's the quaint pubs and country pubs and things like that. But then when you think of the hard drinking culture and the loutish behaviour that sometimes comes with it, it's not always a nice connotation.
I don't think they mean it like the first one.
They're not thinking about the Lake District.
No.
They're thinking about people like in sports shirts, you know, after a game and
getting rowdy.
Yeah.
Final question as an employer. Almost half of HR professionals claim they are dealing with more employee relations issues than before COVID. How should HR communicate with the leadership and external stakeholders about this situation?
So in terms of this situation, the comms that went out afterwards were very much kind of around, look, something really unfortunate happened at the Christmas party. Because ultimately, where you've got someone who has got naked, there's an issue of sexual harassment here, isn't there? You know, it was...
What's like everyone?
Well, within the work, you know, he stood on a table and he had a bit of a naked dance a couple of feet away from somebody's face.
Yeah, he did.
There's quite serious behaviour. So there was communications that had to be managed in terms of a bit of a debrief with staff afterwards to say, well, look, we are taking this incident very seriously. If you would like to come and discuss any concerns with HR, then it's important that you do so. The event was held off company premises. So it was held in a third party. I think it might even have been one of their clients' venues.
Oh, God.
Which, again, wasn't ideal. I think one of the bar staff called the police. But by that point, he'd been sort of sent off in a taxi. So again, there's that sort of side of things where they were having to then say, well, look, this is something that we're dealing with. Internal processes are going on, but we apologise for what's gone on. Which again, there's a big cleanup operation here that's had to go on because of the incident. And where we've kind of got then what comes in left field, which is the wife's phone call to say he's had the mental health breakdown, is where we've then got external stakeholders or employees going, well, have you ended his employment or not? We have had to put the brakes on here to then discuss the mental health element and get to the bottom of that before we've taken measures. But we can't tell people that that's what's going on because that's personal information. It's medical information. We'd be in breach of data protection if we were to say, well, we can't because he's had a mental breakdown. So in some respects, HR in this one, their hands were kind of shackled. They were trying to manage these external relationships where the companies had an embarrassing incident, trying to manage employees' expectations and the worry for some people that he was going to be coming back into the workplace, but also trying to deal with him fairly and balance the mental health element. So there was a lot of comms, managing the situation that had to go on here and balancing that with the procedural element as well.
Ins and outs. It's especially complicated when it's like the question mentioned, stakeholders.
Mm.
You've got to, in a nice, like, round... How do you even dress that up that it's a good thing?
It's just an apology, isn't it? Yes. And people hate apologising. There's, and particularly where somebody does something wrong, and I get this sometimes with clients where somebody does drop the ball, they think that an apology as an admission means that they're going to get sued and they're going to lose. But actually, you're more likely to have a judge be critical of you if you have so blatantly dropped the ball and don't apologise or don't acknowledge that something's happened.
Yeah.
When you're constantly trying to sidestep the issue and just kind of move on. No, apologise. And in this instance, they did. You know, there were people who were upset by it. The venue was extremely upset by it. So they apologised. So look, we're really sorry. Yes, okay, we had no control over his actions, but he was a member of our company. We apologise for any, you know, distress, inconvenience,
damage limitation,
whatever was caused.
At that sort of stage.
Yeah, it's accountability as well.
Mm-hmm. Reflects better on the business. Into employee questions now, and you sort of touched on it a bit there with it being like off work premises, but why is it being treated as a workplace issue when it's not in the workplace per se?
So it was a work event, so it was a work Christmas party. It's been organised by the company.
In work hours?
It whether it's in work hours or not, the fact that it's a work, it's an event that's been organised by work, it's going to be classed as a workplace incident. And this is something that we touch on in the sexual harassment training, is that employers need to be aware. So say if you've got employees who go out for drinks after work together, so it's not work organised, it's not a work sanctioned event or anything like that, it's just people socialising together, there can still be potentially liability attached to the behaviour of employees when they're not on your premises and they're outside of working time. So it's really important in our policies that we set out the standards of behaviour that we expect when people are either in work, at work events, client events, or they are with their colleagues, because it could still result in a complaint if someone's behaviour falls below standard.
You never know, dear. You never know.
And it's not about taking people's fun away. Telling someone they can't get naked and stand on a table isn't taking someone's fun away. We're just telling you to behave like a normal, acceptable, professional person.
You'd think so. Yeah. You would think so. But Dave, in this situation, took umbrage, didn't he?
He did.
And he wanted to show people what he was about. Anyway, second question, as an employee, 35% of people say they've noticed colleagues under the influence of alcohol or drugs at work. If the company provided the alcohol, does that make them partly responsible for what happened?
So it would be an interesting defence, particularly in this one, for Dave to say, it's not my fault, you gave me the alcohol. The response to that would be, well, you're not a child.
It was forced upon me.
Exactly. And there was the suggestion in this case that he'd actually turned up intoxicated. So he'd arrived worse for wear anyway. Mm-hmm. If we haven't set out standards of behaviour, if, you know, we've let the alcohol flow and there's no kind of controls on what people are doing, arguably you'd say, you know, culture tolerated behaviour, but still, in this instance, the behaviour fell so far below an acceptable standard, it's probably not going to be a defence. But what I would say is to companies, to kind of cover yourselves, make sure that you are setting out those standards of behaviour, that you are telling people, this is how we expect you to behave, even though alcohol is served. The other part of what you were saying there about people turning up to work under the influence, though, I've certainly seen an increase in inquiries about this at the moment, not so much alcohol, but drugs, where people are failing drugs tests. And it seems to be happening to a much larger extent than I've experienced before.
Have you noticed any themes in that?
In terms of the specific substances, not so much.
Sectors, anything like that?
No, it's really broad, which, again, that's really, really surprising, because often you do tend to get these things contained within sectors or parts of the country like that. Yeah. And I would say earlier in the year, sort of January, February, pre-Easter time, we were seeing a trend of theft was a big trend. And I think we referenced it on one of the pods. At the moment, it's drugs. And it's, I can't say where it's coming from or why or culturally, socially, what's causing it, or whether it's just an increased awareness within businesses of perhaps behavioural changes or the ability to test people. But we do seem to be seeing an increase in people who are in work under the influence and failing drugs tests.
You might have, I can't remember if it was this one or another one, but you might have answered it yourself, like with the whole like bad times are coming mm-hmm. thing. Like people use it as a bit of a cope.
Potentially, and I think certain substances, there's an attitude where people are starting to think that they're more socially acceptable. But at the end of the day, the classification of them, you know, class A, class B, class C, they're illicit, they're illegal drugs. It doesn't matter. Just because there is a socially acceptable attitude towards them, you know, it's if people are falling into a false sense of security, thinking it'll be treated in the same way as if you're sat in the car smoking a cigarette, it's not. It's really serious.
Yeah, you are quite wrong and naive if you think that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Final question from the employee standpoint. What should I expect from the disciplinary process? And is there any room for leniency considering my personal circumstances? I think that alludes to like the mental health breakdown.
Yeah. So with this one, because of the wife's level of concern, the investigation was paused. It wasn't stopped, but we did ask for medical supporting information to say, well, look, if we can get the medical information, we'll look at an occupational health referral, because ultimately this incident has happened. He did indecently expose himself at a work event. His behaviour fell below standard, but there could be a mitigating factor. So there could be something that kind of reduces his responsibility. So it doesn't eliminate it entirely, but it's going to potentially reduce responsibility.
What do they call that in court? Reduced.
So it's where I should that is because I don't do yeah, it's because I don't do
reduced culpability.
That's kind of more American, but it's where basically someone doesn't have as capacity or diminished responsibility. That's it.
Yeah.
Anyway, a bit more digging on this one. There was no medical history whatsoever. It was the wife who deduced and decided that his behaviour exhibited someone who was having a mental health breakdown. Occupational health didn't agree.
Which she's bound to be biased.
I think it was a concern probably for him and the fact that he was going to be losing his job. So ultimately he was dismissed. It's me involved. Of course he was dismissed.
That saves our closing thoughts.
Yeah.
Spoiler. Lessons learned from this one. So what emergency measures can HR departments take to prevent employees' drunken mistakes in future?
Policy. As always.
Time.
So set out what we expect from people. Do we really need an open bar? You know, I've been to events where you get tokens, so it's kind of controlling how much
you
can...
Yeah, like 2 or 3, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you always get the black market with people swapping the tokens behind a curtain somewhere.
You
but, you know, think about how you can sensibly still let people have a good time and feel like they are being recognised or rewarded, but also how we can put some measures on that and give some consideration to alcohol-free events. And immediately the response that you kind of get is, oh, don't be so boring, but why does alcohol need to attach itself to people having a good time?
I agree, 100%.
And it's more inclusive. So let's be super modern and think about, you know, whether that's something that we can explore. And, you know, making sure that we're following processes then when something happens. And in this instance where there is then potentially that mental health element, the employer did absolutely the right thing in that they paused it. They really did give the guy the benefit of the doubt and said, right, well, give us your medical history, we'll refer you to occupational health and we'll see what support or potentially other mitigating factors there are there that are going to help you in this situation. But they weren't there.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised. You've already spoiled it and said he got sacked, so the closing thoughts is pretty much none.
Closing thoughts, don't get drunk and get naked at the Christmas party. Yeah.
From your personal perspective as well, you've made it like... I don't say you made it clear because that sounds like quite totalitarian, but like this whole like reduced alcohol thing, I agree with you.
Yeah, and I think, so for me, I drive a long way to get to the office.
You do?
It's, you know, if alcohol's involved, it means an overnight stay, invariably then late night. I think, well, why does it have to be? What is the purpose of a work event? It's not for everybody to go and get smashed together. That's not why we have Christmas parties. We have Christmas parties generally to recognise what people have done in the year, for the company to say thank you, for everybody either to have a nice meal or a nice time, connect with their colleagues socially, and all go home still friends. Mm-hmm. It's not just a reason for everybody to go together and get absolutely overloaded. That's just not what, that's not why we have them in the first place.
I agree.
So thinking about what we want to achieve by them. And I think what we're seeing an increase in popularity with as well is a move away from, you know, all meeting up in a pub to more kind of doing things. And I know this is something that Dawn keeps pushing is, you know, every week it's a different activity, isn't it? Can we do this at the Christmas party? And it's gone from what, crazy golf to karaoke
to...
Yeah,
there's been a few. Shuffleboard, there's been all sorts. Yeah.
But where I think people, they're team building opportunities as well, where people can do something fun, create some work memories in a holistic and kind of healthy, happy way rather than just getting smashed.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks.
Go on. My R and L I Christmas party is always epic. I'm not going to be putting my cards on the table and saying I won't be drinking at that because I will be.
Okay, so you will be boozing.
Yeah, I will be boozing at that one.
But just not at ours.
Not at ours, no.
Oh, well.
Professional face on for the work party.
Nice to know you've got your favourites. but yeah, that is, we've hit the half an hour mark on the button.
Yeah. Pros at this now.
We are getting quite good, aren't we? I do feel ever so comfortable sat in this chair.
If you have any stories that you'd like us to cover or anything that you would like us to answer, please don't hesitate to reach out on the website or on our socials at Heroes. Thank you, Oliver Robinson, for joining us again. Episode 21.
We made it. Top percentile. Like, comment, subscribe. Cheers. Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media or even hrer@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.